a reading from Psalm 84. How lovely is your dwelling place, O Lord of hosts! My soul longs, indeed it faints, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh sing for joy to the living God. Even the sparrow finds a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. At your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Happy are those who live in your house, ever singing your praise. From Psalm 112. Praise the Lord. Happy are those who fear the Lord, who greatly delight in his commandments. Their descendants will be mighty in the land. The generation of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches are in their houses, and their righteousness endures forever. They rise in the darkness as a light for the upright. They are gracious, merciful, and righteous. It is well with those who deal generously and lend, who conduct their affairs with justice. For the righteous will never be moved. They will be remembered forever. They are not afraid of evil tidings. Their hearts are firm, secure in the Lord. Their hearts are steady. They will not be afraid. In the end, they will look in triumph on their foes. They have distributed freely. They have given to the poor. Their righteousness endures forever. Their horn is exalted in honor.
This morning, we continue our worship series, Spiritual Affective Disorder, as we recognize that just as these longer, colder days can affect our psyche, so can our neglect to give attention to our spiritual selves. And as I said when we first started this series, this thing called seasonal affective disorder, it's a real issue affecting millions of folks, as is the case with depression. And so I want to encourage us to continue to be a place to talk about those things and to seek support or provide support, whatever the case may be. Thus far in our series, we've reflected a bit of what we can do in our everyday comings and goings to perk up our moods a bit. But far more than that, we've examined some possibilities for boosting our spiritual connection with God and with one another. We've talked about doing random acts of kindness or taking ourselves a little less seriously and making time for laughter. We talked about adjusting our playlist or turning down the volume of those old record players of folks telling us who and what we are. We've tried to find new ways or old ways we've forgotten to renew our spiritual lives. Today, we are invited to consider where we best find God. And in like fashion, I'd like to ask, where might God best find us? For what I believe, or at least I've found in my own life, is that sometimes there's a disconnect between the two. I am thrilled, and I give thanks every week for your attendance in worship. I hope you get something out of it each week. I'm sure some weeks more than others for any variety of reasons. But know that when you come, when you make an effort to be here, when you make church a priority, it encourages others. It certainly encourages me and the rest of our worship team who really work hard to try to make our time together transforming. But far more important, it encourages others. How many of you are encouraged when Miss Elnora, week in and week out, rises above what she calls her enemy, arthritis, and comes to church or Teenagers, or Praise Fest, or Interfaith Worships, or Women's Marches. I can tell you that I'm inspired by her. And I'm inspired by many of you who make such commitments and sacrifices to our church with your time and your talents and your resources. I'm inspired by Jewel and Jose, who took a chance on us after a really uncomfortable situation with Emmanuel. Indeed, part of the reason we make a commitment to the church is because we believe that faith communities matter. We believe that they enrich our lives while they also provide ways to make a difference in our community. Strengthen numbers, if you will. And I would guess that part of the reason we come to church in a world that's so full of division and chaos and noise is that coming to church gives us a break from all of that. Or at least it should. Every week, in all the hustle and bustle of getting ready for worship and greeting one another and sharing coffee and me dodging the donuts and every week as we catch up with each other about our week, there comes a point every Sunday when we give a clear indication that worship is about to begin. Perhaps with the sounding of 10 chimes. Thank you, Scott, for doing that for us this morning. Perhaps with the beginning of one of Brenda's beautiful preludes. So when those things happen, the chimes or the prelude begins, what goes through your mind? When you hear the chimes, what happens? What causes you to pause talking and get in the worship zone? If we're honest, I bet on any given Sunday when the chimes roll, some are thinking, I sure hope Marsh isn't long-winded this morning. Because I got places to be. But more Sundays than not, what I witness, and I say I witness because I can actually watch it happen. I see folks preparing their hearts and minds for worship. I see folks respecting the reverence of sacred moments that we anticipate might happen. I see you taking a deep breath, bowing a head in prayer, reaching out to hold the hand of a friend or a loved one. It's here that we find sanctuary in some way. Now for me, and I've shared this with you before, the last thing I do before joining you in our sanctuary, and I'm happy Kenny joined me this morning as our new associate minister as we gather right before worship starts, the last thing I do is I put my hands on the desk that I inherited from Herm Heise, and I pray this prayer every week. God, we have planned and we have prepared to bring the gospel to your people. Now it's yours. May your spirit move, and may we get out of the way. Every week. And then I leave the office and join your smiling faces. And many Sundays, especially when I walk in during Brenda's prelude, I light the Christ candle and was honored Kenny did that this morning, and often pause and look up at the cross and the stained glass. I remember vividly last week I was at the back with Seth, and there's beautiful big snowflakes blowing behind the window with the stained glass. This morning, as we talk about altars everywhere, it may be worthwhile for you too to reflect upon where you find altars. Now, by definition, altars are spaces where offerings are made. And in the ancient Hebrew community where the psalmist was writing, altars were places that sacrifices were given to the presiding priest. Then over time, these huge altars have been built in churches and temples. And in Christian churches, they have become the place from which the Eucharist of the Lord's Supper was served. But what I described to you this morning as my Sunday routine has at least four altars. Places where I find the presence of God. But also places where I bring offerings to God. The desk of my office. The cross in our sanctuary. The Christ candle. The stained glass. And that's before church even starts. These are four places, though, that I experience God week in and week out. And these are places where I come with my commitment and my covenant with God to sacrificial living in terms of my time and my talent and my treasures. Church is good. Altars in the church are good. Feeling an intimate connection with God and sacred places such as ours is good. It's good. It's all good. And yet, what happens when we leave? What happens when we return to the life journeys from which we came? It doesn't even make sense, does it, to expect 90 minutes, oh, sometimes 110, but 90 minutes of weekly church to sustain us for the other 166 and a half hours of the week. So we got to recognize that God's dwelling place is not confined to the church. Sacred spaces are not confined to the church. And likewise, transformation and inspired living is not confined to the church. While I shared some very moving parts of my Sunday routine with you, if I'm honest, the moments that I felt closest to God always happen outside the church. Church grounds me. It grounds those moments and it starts that percolating process. But the moments come far away from church confinement. A mountaintop winter church retreat. That was the place. Deciding to join other folks from my church seemed like a fun thing to do. I'd never been to any church retreats as an adult. I'd gone to church camp as a kid a lot. But I liked a lot of the people that were going, and it was, after all, only in Irvine at a place called the Cathedral Domain. So if I got real bored, I could make up a good excuse and leave early. But that didn't happen. I didn't get bored. My Southern Baptist upbringing, they'd say I got convicted. But I was attending a Disciple of Christ church at the time, so they'd say I got challenged. Call it what you want. But it was in that simple chapel on the Sunday morning worship before we left that I felt a call to ministry that I could no longer ignore. Hearing the echoes of a dormant call from my teenage years, from my neglect or my inability to answer that call. In the events of that morning, I couldn't really tell you what was said. I don't remember what kind of juice was in the communion cup. But I can tell you what song we sung. I, the Lord of sea and sky, I have heard my people cry, all who dwell in deepest sin, my hand will save. I who made the stars of night, I will make their darkness bright. Who will bear my light to them? Who shall I send? Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, if you
people's pain. I have wept for love of them. They turn away. I will break their hearts of stone. Give them hearts for love alone. I will speak my word to them. Shall I send?
Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in the night. I will. If you lead me, I will hold your people in my heart.
I, the Lord of wind and flame,
I will tend the poor and
I will set a feast for them.
My hand will say,
finest bread I will provide, till their hearts are satisfied. I will give my life to them. Shall I send? Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in the night. I will go, Lord, if you lead me. I will hold your people in my heart.
Away from church, a mountaintop altar, change my world. There must be something about mountains. Maybe that's why the ancient community wrote about them a lot, and God certainly liked to hang around mountains, calling folks like Abraham and Moses. wrestling with folks like Jacob. And Jesus taught a lot on mountains and also retreated to them when the world got too crazy for him to deal with. A hot, hazy August day in San Jose, California. A long scheduled youth labyrinth walk at the top of the mountain overlooking the city. I'd wondered for 10 weeks why in the world a labyrinth walk was on the church calendar. And I wondered even more what in the world a labyrinth was. How are you supposed to walk it, and what was I supposed to get out of it? But walk I did. And to make a long, transformative story short, as I opened my eyes upon reaching the center of the labyrinth, I knew very clearly that God was calling me to return to Kentucky and to pastor a church. But why, God? My life was pretty comfortable. I really got to enjoy three-day weekends. And wouldn't it be enough, God, for me to just do some part-time chaplaincy and fill pulpit here and there? And how, God? I couldn't be ordained because the rules wouldn't allow me to be. There were no job openings for pastors in Lexington, especially for non-ordained ministers. What gives, God? Well, as they say, the rest is history, and here we are. Finally, one more share. A 7-year hiatus from church. You all that know me know this story pretty well. The church I grew up in kicked me out when I was 28 years old when I came out. I was so disappointed. I was so hurt. I was so angry that I didn't want anything to do with church. I was D-O-N-E done with church and all people about church. Done. Oh, if only God were confined to church. If only God was done with me like I thought I was done with God. We might all have it made, huh? We just come in, check the box, and go on about our lives. But no matter where I went that 7 years, no matter how angry I was, God never left me. And in truth, I never left God. I left church. And so I thought I left God. But then I'd visit a beach or take a nature hike or join my non-religious friends for a campfire or a habitat build. And God dwelled wherever I was. Because, my friends, God dwells in you and in me. Our offerings and our sacrifices, not only are they not limited to church, but in truth, they become more important when we leave. Eventually, God led the church, and I am so grateful that God led and more grateful that I followed. Because now, I got the best of both worlds when it comes to feeling God's presence. We might best find God in the sacredness of this place. But we might just as easily find God most on a mountain, at the beach, on a hike, at a march for refugees, on the steps of government offices where we find our voice for justice. And God finds us in those places too. And that, my friends, is how I define an altar. Those spaces and places where God and I find each other. Listen, if you limit that indwelling and that blessed intersection to only what happens in these four walls, You're going to shortchange an amazing partnership with an amazing God. And if you limit that indwelling and that blessed intersection to only what happens out there, I think you're going to miss out on an amazing faith community that walks with fellowship and love and advocacy and justice. But the good news is, no, the great news is that connections with God, they're everywhere. Connections with people, they're everywhere. And the possibilities are endless when we are open and receptive and willing to find those spaces, those places, those faces that remind you that God is there. Here I am, Lord. Is it I, Lord? I have heard you calling in the night. I will.